In the name of God, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, please be seated. There is a preacher's dilemma this morning. Not many of you should become teachers, my brothers and sisters. You know that we who teach will be judged with a greater strictness, for all of us make many mistakes. Or in the paraphrase of this passage out of the Message, which I like very much, says, you get it wrong every time you open your mouth. To put it in more theological terms, great 19th century theologian Karl Barth once said that to say anything about God is a sin, because to say that God is one thing is to imply that God is not another, and you are putting limitations on God. Therefore, to limit God is sinful. So, one might think this would cause the preacher, well, to sit down, which might be really good news for you, but you know that's not going to happen. And it's okay because the Cowboys don't play until tonight, so you're all right. Because Karl Barth also said that while it is true that to say anything about God is a sin, we must proclaim God. So sin boldly, he said. Sin boldly. Because we must proclaim the redemptive love of Jesus. And how else are they to know? So sin boldly, get it wrong, but get the word out there. And so that's our task today. James is very concerned about the words that we say. He thinks that words are very, very powerful. We talked about this several weeks ago when we introduced James, and here we are in the third chapter, and we're still talking about it. And he uses these great metaphors in here about a ship and a rudder. The human tongue is like a rudder on a ship, this tiny little thing that can turn the whole thing. A bit in the mouth of a horse, or fire, a little tiny fire that can set the whole world ablaze. He's very concerned about the way we use our tongues. So maybe a little context is helpful, although we have very little actual context for James. We don't know who he was writing to. We don't know who he was. We don't know when it was. We don't know really anything. James is wisdom literature, as we've said before, full of wise thoughts about Christian life, very consistent with Jewish teaching, most of it. But to get James's primary point, I think we have to go back to the first chapter. So there's some Bibles in the pew in front of you. You may have one with you. Turn to the first chapter of James. If you got it on your phone, now you have permission to get your phone out in church, right? But put it away when I'm finished talking. So James is in the New Testament, close to Revelation. Just go to the back. You'll find it eventually. But while you're looking for it, James spends no time talking about Jesus. So all we can assume is that James is talking to people who already are people of the faith. And so what he's saying is, he's talking to people who have been redeemed. And so he's saying, what does redemption actually look like? How do you know? Just by looking at someone, or just by looking at yourself in the mirror, how do you know that this redemption has taken, that it's part of who you are? And he says it this way, there in the first chapter, verse 26, he says that if you do not bridle your tongue, you cannot claim to be a person of faith. He said, because true religion is this, to care for widows and orphans in their distress and to keep oneself unstained from the world. To care for widows and orphans in their distress and to keep oneself unstained from the world. If you're doing those things, if the words that come out of your mouth are about those things, then perhaps the redemption is starting to show up in your life. You're starting to reflect that redeemed nature in the world. And that's why he cares about words so much. Because the things that come out of our mouth are the greatest evidence of this living faith in our hearts. So he asks us to be careful. He says, he uses all these images. He says, bridle your tongue, which is an odd looking thing. I remember my father when I was a child, when I was about to start saying stuff that I probably shouldn't say. It shouldn't come out of my mouth. He would look at me with those piercing blue eyes, and he would point at me, and he would say, "Watch your mouth, boy." I think that's what James is saying. Watch your mouth, boy. Watch your mouth, girl. Watch what comes out of your mouth. Because your words can build up and they can destroy. They can create and they can set ablaze. Is there ever been a time, no, I'll take it back. There has never been a time in history when we did not have more words at our disposal than we have right now. I mean, think of it. When James was writing this letter, there were two ways to communicate, verbally or in writing, a letter. But think about it now. Think about the tools at your disposal and mine, just at the tip of your, the palm of your hand most of the time. All the tools that you could ever need to communicate whatever you think, whatever you believe, whatever you care about to as many people as possible, more people than James ever met in his life. All of that is at our disposal. So how do you use those things? And if we look at the way the world uses them most of the time, we might be in pretty dangerous territory. So ask yourself, how do you use them? Think about the words that you have already spoken today. Just the words that have come out of your mouth. Were they affirming? Were they loving? Were they necessary? Were they helpful? Did they build anyone up? Did they encourage anyone? Or were they harsh, short, judgmental, dismissive, fearful? Think about all the social media tools that you use. Now, I just taught the teenager Sunday school class today, and I realized I think adults are the only one that use Facebook anymore. So I was sad to discover that. I remember my niece saying when Facebook hit, she was in college and she loved it for a while, but then she said, and then all the parents showed up and they kind of ruined it. So my whole sermon's about Facebook, but they didn't really care about that. But Instagram and Snapchat and Twitter and all the rest. Think about all the tools that we use. What did you put out there this week? Was it good? Was it encouraging? Was it affirming? Did the people that read it think, oh, that helped me. That helped me in my faith. That helped me in my life. It was funny. It was playful. It was lovely. It was beautiful. Or was it vicious, violent, negative, destructive, distrustful? Did it breed discontent? Because that's the way the world uses it most of the time. It seems like every time you turn on the television, occasionally there's something lovely there, but most of the time, think about the shows you enjoy, the newscast that you listen to. Does it build you up? Have you heard conversations in television shows that looked like the kingdom, that were beautiful, that pulled someone out of the jaws of the lion, that affirmed, that built up, that encouraged? Seems like most of them are just the opposite. Distrustful and hate-filled and suspicious and angry and fearful, cynical and sarcastic. I think that in the modern world, what being unstained by the world means is refusing to use words that way. Just saying, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to fill my Facebook and my Twitter feed with political rants and angry diatribes about all the things I care about or the people that I hate or the people I'm afraid of. I'm just not going to do it. I hate and I'm afraid, but I'm not going to do it because I am redeemed. And I believe that love is stronger. So I'm going to say things that build up, that encourage, that bless. You know, you remember what he said here in the third chapter a little further on. He says, with the same mouth, you bless God the Father, and then you curse those who are created in his image. How can that be? He says. Or again, the same paraphrase is the message. He says, you can't do this anymore. This can't go on any longer. You can't bless God and then curse those made in his image. Or again, another old saw from my childhood in the South. I'm sure you've heard this one. When people say foul things or mean or destructive things, if anybody look at you and say, "You kiss your mama with that mouth?" You ever heard that one? Really? All that violence, all that vile stuff that comes roaring out of the mouth of a redeemed person? What? It can't be. So that's what I think it means to be unstained from the world in the modern context. And I think it's directly related to his other agenda, which is to care for widows and orphans in their distress. Right? Widows and orphans in his context, I think, were actually people everyone knew. I mean, there was a small community, tribal group. Widows and orphans were people they knew, by name probably. So how are you caring for those folks? Again, in the modern context, it's just need. It's anybody who's in pain, who is alone, who is hungry, who is scared, who is sick, who needs the love and affection of someone else. Anybody. So how do you use your words about that? How do you use your words about the world that's in need? What do you say about the poor? What do you say about the hungry, the homeless? What do you say about the immigrant? What do you say about the refugee? What kind of words come out of your mouth? Are they fearful and hate-filled? Are they, it's their own fault, as if all the suffering in the world is because one person made bad decisions? It's their own fault. They got themselves in there. They should just get a job, get to work like all the rest of us. It's not my fault. Racism's not real anymore. It's not here. It's not in my neighborhood. I don't know those people. When you think about Syria, do you think, oh my gosh, these people desperately need the love of the redeemed? Or do you say, the Middle East has been at war as long as anybody can remember. There's not anything you can do about it. Words of hate, fear, dismissal, unredeemed words coming out of the mouth of the redeemed. Or do you say, oh, there's so much pain and so much sadness and so much need in the world, and it's scary, and I don't really know what to do about it, but I'm going to try. And I don't know why people are poor and hungry and homeless or lost and alone and afraid, and I don't know why people blow each other up. I don't know why, but I'm going to try to do something about it because I'm redeemed. I'm going to see where there's pain that I can touch, where I have some resources, and I'm going to do something about that. You know, what if we partnered as a parish with Prosper Waco? What if we jumped on board with the city's initiatives to take care of the poor and the orphan and the widow in our community? What if we jumped on board? I had a meeting Saturday with the other Episcopal rectors and several people from each parish with Matthew Polk, the director of Prosper Waco, about how can we as congregations jump in this? How can we work with children and young teenagers to help cut down on the pregnancy rate of teenagers? How can we help make sure that women have proper health care? How can we make sure everybody has access to health care? How can we make sure that people have enough training to get a job that is meaningful and that pays them enough to eat every day? How can we make sure that people have access to a safe place to live? How can we help? I don't know how, but we're pretty smart together, and I bet we could work something out. Or what if when the State Department decides that it's okay to bring more Syrian refugees into the United States, what if we said, I don't know how to do this, but we will. We'll take a family. We'll figure it out. We're smart. We're resourceful. We got beds and places for people to live. We can sort this out. We're smart. It's not all of them. It's not everybody, but it's one. It's about, this is what the redeemed people look like. These are the words that redeemed people say. They say yes to people who are in need. They say yes to those who are lonely. They say no to hatred and violence and diatribe. That's how the world knows. It's because we're careful about what we say. We're careful about what we put on Facebook. We're intentional about the message we send because we watch our mouth. We watch our mouths. In the name of God, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit.